Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, dearest Mother, beloved David, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Be thou the only king reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Thanks all for coming tonight. Thanks, Larry, for letting me step in. So we've got three readings. The first is our Bible reading. And it's going to sound a lot like the meditation song. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. That's Matthew 5:14. And from Papa, this is from the Divine Life, Volume 2. What a saint stands for. The aim of a saint's life is to spend all its energies, physical, mental, and spiritual, for the welfare of humanity. The struggling and distressed souls call for his sympathy, goodwill, and help. He is by nature all kindness, mercy, and love. So at every step, his life is poured out as a selfless dedication for the removal of pain and misery in the world, in whatsoever form they exist. Blessed are they who share with the saint in acts of service. The world misunderstands the saint. Some expect him to live and act according to a standard which they have set up. They criticize, dictate, and find fault with him because he does not fit into a mold prepared by them. The ways of a saint are mysterious. He is a glorious embodiment of divinity, shedding light and grace on all who come in contact with him. The saint is no doubt all-powerful because he is a vehicle through whom the divine Shakti reveals itself. Still in the task of uplifting mankind and bringing unity and harmony in the world, he invites help and cooperation of all aspirants and devotees who have faith in and love for him. The great masters and teachers of the world, past and present, are shining examples. Krishna fought against forces of darkness with the help of his intimate devotees and friends. Buddha preached his religion of ahimsa and emancipation with the aid of his innumerable disciples. Jesus Christ carried the light of his gospel of love to all the nations on the earth through his faithful followers. Rama conquered the great Asura, who was a source of terror to all peace-loving people of the time, assisted by monkeys who were devoted to him. Instances of this kind can be multiplied. It must be considered that when God affords us an opportunity to be of service to a saint, we are really blessed. Life is worth living when all its powers are at his feet. Intellect often misguides, but the heart awakened to divine love is a true counselor. A saint's dependence upon God is always entire. God protects him and provides him with all the materials to carry out his mission through human agents. Whenever a saint receives any assistance from any quarter, he takes it as coming from his eternal beloved. All his transactions are with him. He is the giver and he is the receiver. When people take part in any task which a saint undertakes, they do so for their own material or spiritual advancement. They do not grasp this, and they think that they are all important and nothing would happen without them. They forget that God, by his inscrutable methods, carries out his will through his prepared human instruments on this earth. Man, in his conceit, thinks that he is the doer. He is wise and that his ideas are correct, however narrow and imperfect they may be. It has become a vogue with many so-called spiritual aspirants to go on visits to saints, not to draw light and inspiration from them for their upward progress, but to compare and judge them. They think they are very clever, but their cleverness is nothing before the magnificent glory of saints who shine by their own light and are the benefactors of humanity. Therefore, let the spiritual aspirant honor saints, serve them selflessly, entitle themselves to their grace, and thus, illuminating their lives with divine splendor, rise to the statue of sainthood. And from David, this is from David's Notes to Sadducus, entitled Compassion. Compassion is the very watchword of saints and realized masters. Compassion is the extension of empathy for all suffering. In gaining realization of our oneness with the all-pervading reality, it is realized that there is no difference between ourselves and all that we survey. Realized beings have experienced existing as blades of grass over which people walk. They feel the vibration of stone and mountain, while knowing it is not inert matter, but living substance with vibrations, consciousness, and spirit. With this expanded sense of identity, how could the realized beings not have an identification, understanding, and compassion for all suffering? It would be literally impossible. For those who, once gaining their realization, make a vow to continue to come back to this sphere where ignorance reigns in order to help those suffering from that ignorance to gain realization as well. Such is the love and compassion produced in such ones. In that pursuit of awakening humanity, fully realized beings take on a garb of flesh and ignorance for the sake of humanity. They will see themselves, at least for a time, as separate from the realized state they hold so dear. With a crushing sense of confinement, they voluntarily focus their attention on a tiny mass of flesh and bone and identify with that, leaving behind their omnipresence, their bliss, their absolute oneness with the whole. The narrow confines of this state of ignorance, so newly worn, chafes against their freedom-loving nature. They feel themselves driven to regain the lost status of their divine heritage. Similar in nature to those souls who are nearing their final mile of realization, these great beings enact the drama of gaining their realization once again. Oftentimes, they take on a much greater load of karma than the average individual, for they have come to pay the price of ransom for many. Far from having an easier time of it, since their cloak of ignorance has been so newly donned, they suffer greater extremes. Like the adult who takes a load from their child's backpack when they tire on a hike, so does the realized master assume the burden of those who God has brought to them for help on their way. More than others, these compassionate masters realize the paradise lost by all humanity. They know the huge loss entailed in suffering through narrow identification of body consciousness. They yearn to awaken us all to our real nature, but they find that although suffering abounds, most want to continue sleeping. Rather than the suffering spurring on the desire to awaken, the sleepyheads only roll over for some time, asking for a happier dream. So humanity dreams on. What can be done? Free will is the birthright of each soul. Our mother Hamilton was such a one, a soul who came of her own free will, not compelled by the law of cause and effect. Only the law of compassion brought her to this vale of tears. She, along with her great guru, Paramahansa Yogananda, came to awaken humanity from their terrible sleep. In the same century that was graced with great spiritual masters and scientific advancements, it was also a century stricken with unparalleled suffering. It is said that Adolf Hitler killed 20 million people, Lenin 20 million, Joseph Stalin 40 million, and Mao Tse-tung topped them all with 60 million. The additional horror to it all? Most of these deaths were not victims of war with another country, but of those who lived within the borders of the very same country as the vicious leaders. It is an unaccountable mystery how a Hitler, Lenin, Stalin, and Mao can coexist on the same planet as Mahatma Gandhi, Paramahansa Yogananda, Mother Hamilton, and Babaji. I believe that it was not only brave individuals giving their lives for freedom on the battlefield that has seen the brutality of these movements beaten back again and again, but the sacrifice of these great spiritual masters as well. These spiritual masters came at a crucial time in history. With the rapid development of scientific intelligence in combination with these dark forces unleashed on the earth, the world could have easily seen ruthless dictators with nuclear weapons. And could there be any doubt that if any one of these cruel and ruthless leaders were in sole possession of such weapons, they would have hesitated to use them to advance their own selfish interests and self-aggrandizement? It is a dark thought to think of Hitler in sole possession of nuclear bombs and rockets. Master once stated that it was Jesus and Babaji who planted the idea in Hitler's vain mind to attack Russia. Without that blunder, it is very conceivable that Hitler would have overwhelmed Britain and had the time to develop not only the intercontinental missile, but nuclear weapons as well. What a different world this would be. True spiritual masters are ever helping the world to come into its rightful inheritance of the kingdom of heaven. But equally so, the Supreme Creator has endowed each soul with free will. It is a soul choice, individually and collectively, what kind of world we create. Really, we have everything needed to make this a paradise on earth. But the human heart must change from selfish self-interest to universal compassion. Think of the resources wasted in wars and conflict, and the intelligence and creativity employed for destructive ends. If this human genius can be focused on health, physical, mental, and spiritual, we could indeed have a heaven on earth. Simple laws of behavior make it so. Jesus summed it up with the teaching to love God above all else and to demonstrate that love toward all humankind. If we emulated even a portion of the compassion these great masters show us, how we in this world would change. We could not lie to another, cheat, steal, commit adultery, or even hurt and destroy our bodies through drugs, alcohol, or other destructive habits. Compassion is not being a mushhead. It does not mean that our feelings rule our actions. Rather, it is the clear knowledge that we cannot separate our own interests from all those around us. There is a saying that you do not foul your own nest. Well, this world is our nest, not just our little family unit, but the world is our family. Not just our local community, but the world is our community. In these days of overstimulation by the media that may seem too much, but that is because we try to grasp the idea with our mind. Rather, it is something to be grasped by the Spirit. We can start by opening ourselves to those all around us. We can do this silently, inwardly, by simply making forays of conscious compassion to the world around us. Most of us exist with a covering around us, around our heart. We have toughened ourselves as proof against being overwhelmed by the misery within us and in the world at large. I'm going to read that again. We can do this silently, inwardly, by simply making forays of conscious compassion to the world around us. Most of us exist with a covering around us, around our hearts. We have toughened ourselves as proof against being overwhelmed by the misery within us and in the world at large. What will protect us in the forays of compassion? It is by first becoming established in spiritual consciousness. Now, that does not need to be an overwhelming assignment in itself. It can be quite simple. Let us start by feeling oneness with the heart of God, very simply, right inside our own hearts. See the world as God must see this world. Most people wear veneers of knowing what they are about, but inside they are not at all certain. We can feel ourselves in touch with a capacity for empathy for this human condition, while, of course, including ourselves in this compassion as well. Remain above it all, yet intimately connected with the pain and suffering of all. Feel the pulse of humanity so that we do not drown in the emotion of it all. It is important that we keep ourselves separate from it as well as connected with it. With conscious awareness, we feel the rhythm of all humanity, but even more so, we feel divine compassion. From that compassion flows a continual stream of love. As the parent watches the child struggling to build something, the child wants no help. The wise parent realizes that the child must struggle on his or her own. And yet the parent can feel the struggle of the child. There may be moments when a word from the adult here and there clears the way for the child, but timing is important. Likewise, struggling humanity is often not in need of advice, but wise compassion. I have heard of a principle in physics that states, anything observed will be changed. Not through the intention of the observer, but as a natural course of nature. Human beings certainly fall into that principle as well. Whenever anything is observed, the observed will change. If the observer tries to change that which is observed, the observed oftentimes reacts with oppositional will. We can think of times when we have been on the receiving end of well-intentioned advice. Sometimes, even when we know it is sound advice, we may fight against it just out of general principle, being that the idea did not originate with us. But let someone be with us, compassionately, understandingly, and we will know the right thing to do spontaneously. Through acceptance from another, we learn acceptance of ourselves. Through self-acceptance, we automatically come into deeper touch with what our wisdom would naturally want us to know. From being compassionately observed, we find that we change automatically. The purer the consciousness that is observing us, the more perfect a reflection we may see in our own soul. The more perfect the consciousness under observation, the more perfect a soul reflection may be seen by the observed. This is the principle underlying darshan. Darshan means literally the sight of another person. In India, it is being in the presence of a realized being. When a sincere devotee comes into the province of a realized being, a transmission of compassionate grace is transmitted to devotees, allowing them to know the true reflection of their soul. The more refined the devotee, the more they may see for themselves their true spiritual nature. This is the grace of being in the purified company of saints and realized beings. To one who has no such sensitivities, they seem an ordinary person or a reflection of themselves. However, the compassion of grace flows to all alike. I've been thinking about how little compassion has been flowing between ordinary people these days. How little we are seeing people empathizing, and how many walls are being built up to the point of wars and attacks. And how each one of us needs to become saint-like in that way, that we start to see others with compassion and empathy, that we start to see others as God sees us and sees them. And that this is the only way to a lasting peace. That begins with ourselves. And when we meet a saint or our guru, they see us with God's compassion. And that awakens that feeling of God, feeling of truth, feeling of peace that we've been searching for. And they plant that seed. And God's idea by planting that seed is that then we give that same compassion and love and peace and understanding to those that we see. And the most important thing with these teachings, and it's the most difficult, is to do that for those that we don't love, for those that anger us, that make us fearful. It's easy to do it within our own sphere. It's easy to do it within our own loving circle. But we are charged with doing that for those that we don't love, for those that we don't relate to, for those that we don't agree with, and to begin to see them with God's compassion. When Swami Muktananda was here, he gave a beautiful image of raising your sight above a situation until it became beautiful. And the metaphor that he gave for that was, even a garbage dump can look beautiful if you go high enough in the air. It just disappears into the beauty of the earth. And so when we're in conflict with others, when we are seeing others' unlovely qualities, when we are seeing fear and anger in others, we have to begin to rise above so that we can empathize with them, so that we can be compassionate, so we can find that place where we understand why they're acting the way that they are, and bring God into that situation. We elevate our vision, and in doing so, we connect more deeply with God, and we become a conduit for all those involved. This begins first at home. This begins first within our own selves. If we can't do this with our own foibles, with our own mistakes, it's impossible to do it on the outside. And so we begin by thinking about those things that we regret. And I'd invite you to do that right now. Things that have happened in the past, things that have happened recently, the things that your mind runs over and over. Ah, how could I have done that? Oh, how could I have acted that way? And often what happens the mind in an attempt to protect itself, in an attempt to make itself feel proud and correct, starts to look for things to blame. And that's how those walls get built. And so we begin to see others as different than us. Others become the reason for our errors. Others become the reasons for our anger, for our sadness, for our pain. And in doing this, we build walls of separation. And this does not lead to our oneness. And so we begin to look at our actions. We begin to look at our behaviors and we bring them back to God. And if we want to admonish anyone, we admonish God for our misbehaviors. We say, God, why did you put that thought into my head? Why did you make me speak to that person in that way? Why did you make me put that wall between us? Why didn't you make me softer? Why didn't you make me kinder? This reconnects us with God. As soon as we begin to build walls between ourselves and others, we begin to wall ourselves off from God's love, from God's compassion, and from God's direction. And so it's essential that we take these walls down. So thinking back to those things that run through our head that separate us from those around us and from our God self. Take one that comes to mind immediately. Something that maybe kept you up at night. Something that makes you feel angry or irritated. That ping-ponging. Between, I'm such a terrible person that I would act that way, and, oh, they're so terrible to make me act that way. Can be something more tamasic, something more lethargic, just simply the act of not wanting to act when there's something that comes before you. And you know that you need to act, that you need to speak up in that righteous way that Papa talked about. And I want you to lift that up to God in this moment. Think of the words of that beautiful meditation song, "Be not afraid, I go before you always." And lift these missteps, these small amounts of delusion, these errors in thinking, lift them up to God in purity, like a small child showing the mistake that they've made without any judgment. Just simply, this is my action. This is what it caused. Can you fix it? With all the trust that a small child has when they take a broken toy to a parent, we don't know how to correct these things. We've tried, but God knows. And God has the ultimate compassion for us. More than a grandparent, more than a beloved auntie, God sees the reason that every single action takes place and knows that we've done the best we could. And so just bringing it back to him and allowing him to lift that from us. So the scales may be lifted from our eyes. So we can join together as one. like the saints, like the realized beings, that understand that even the rocks are part of our being. Nothing is separate from us. Can you imagine living in that consciousness? That each step you take affects your own body as it touches the earth. Each thought we think creates this universe. As God and the saints work through us. Can you imagine being a beautiful open conduit, like we've seen David, Swamiji, Mother, Master, working for God in perfect harmony, perfect communication? We think about extending that compassion to all living things, to animate, inanimate, all beings, all of creation. And thinking in particular about those things that you are find unlovely or unwelcoming. Potentially things that cause great harm. What comes up? I'm curious to hear people's experience of that when you imagine loving your enemy, not just your friends. You imagine reaching out with God's love to those doing harm to others. What comes up for you? Anybody have a strong or beautiful, either negative or positive? Reaction to that, what they would share. Mira?
I shared with our smaller Sunday evening class before that just seeing the leaders who are causing harm so drastically, to see them as little children that I can hold and hug and tell them it's okay. It's okay. Everything's okay. And just knowing that that harm is so based in the fear and that the fear of not being in control or the fear of not being accepted or acceptable and lashing out with so much power like Putin or
any of us really at some
any of us really, but yeah, I guess that's my experience and being, if I could also translate that same compassion to my own self, that would be lovely. If I can muster it for Putin, you'd think I could do that for my own mistake.
If you take that inside and we think about how quickly we are unforgiving of ourselves, And what that does really for the world by not forgiving ourselves and not seeing ourselves with the compassion that our gurus see us, that God sees us. What kinds of walls that puts up. And such a strong memory with David was, you know, the two of us driving along in his green truck and me explaining to him how he really shouldn't be wasting his time with me because I was really just too far gone and too terrible of a person and had all these terrible thoughts. And he just stopped and said, "You really think that you're bigger than God?" Like this idea that we're so awful that the omnipresent, omnipotent couldn't include us as well. And how egotistical that was. And to really, really just let that sink in of to think that I'm outside of God somehow because of my misdeeds or misthoughts. And what a big, big inflated ego it takes to do that. And it's quite an interesting way to turn it on its head. And yet there's that truth to it, you know, of, you know, other people may be able to get there, but I'm so terrible that there's just no chance. Not anytime soon, certainly. And so to let God poke that pin, poke that with the pin and watch it all just deflate that easily.
Well, and that's what is so magnetic, right, about the saints is that there is that no, there's no wall left up. There's just God's love flowing through. And if that's the goal, then.
And how can we not start to give that to others?
Mm-hmm.
We've been given that. How can we not share that with others?
Mm-hmm.
To think about the fact that so many people never experienced that in their life. And that many of us have gotten to experience it more than once with more than one saint, more than one God-realized person. And so to bring our consciousness to that place that even if it's just for a moment that we start to see others, that we start to observe others from that place, that David talked about so beautifully, of that high consciousness. And we can't help but be affected by that ourselves. We can't help but be changed. Because the only way we can make that happen is to open ourselves and allow God to flow through us. That's the only way we can produce that experience. Thanks for sharing that, Mira. It's such a beautiful image of if you imagine the most unlovely qualities and thinking about a time in our lifespan where, or the other thing I do sometimes is a creature that would be appropriate behavior in. You know, if someone doesn't have good boundaries and is always running up to you and wanting more of your time than you're comfortable with. And you imagine a beautiful Labrador retriever and how we just love it when a dog, you know, can't wait to be around us and wants all of our attention and wants to get all up in our faces. And so there's all these different existences that we can put these experiences into that allow us to enjoy them, you know, that allow us to connect with that consciousness where it is. And we're all in different places on this path. And if we aren't bringing everybody up, we're not really making progress. And so both by our example, but also by our interactions, we can really change this world into a paradise. Other people have anything that these readings brought up for them, either Papa's or David's idea of compassion. Or anything else that they want to share that feels relevant to our time together tonight.
Well, Jill, when you're on this path, you want to always strive for the highest and the best in yourself. You know, you want to always do the right thing. And not too long ago, Laura and I were out in Maine, and we were visiting some friends out there. And she's very passionate about politics. Mm-hmm. And she, the whole time we were there, she kept trying to get me engaged in these conversations. And she's sort of in many of her viewpoints are sort of very much different from my own. And she knows this. And so this is why she kept trying to engage me. And what I said to myself when we went to visit it is I said, you know, I know this is going to happen. I know this is her nature. And to just, you know, be, like you say, compassionate, understanding, rise above the fray, you know, don't get involved. Certainly don't get emotionally overwrought. And of course, many of these, topics today are great hot points. You know, people have very opposing views. You know, you see them dissected in the media by different personalities, and it's very easy to get caught up in. And I did really, really well for about 3 days. And then one morning, you know, I was talking to her, and she kept... It's very early. I get up early, and she has a little baby. So she was up early, and, you know, she kept coming with all these opinions and everything. And I was pretty sweet and nice. And, you know, finally she said something, and I think I just you know, kind of had it with that whole line of, conversation. And I just made some comment, you know, that kind of reflected my view on that, a short comment. And, you know, she just went absolutely ballistic and screaming and yelling and swearing. And, you know, and I, you know, these issues are very emotionally involved for a lot of people. And so, she stomps out of the room and, you know, to a certain extent made it clear we kind of weren't welcome anymore. And, you know, I thought to myself as I sat there, I thought, you know, this was the situation going in. You know that she's a little bit of a powder keg, and you told yourself that you weren't going to, you know, fall for this. You were going to maintain your control and rise above it and do all the things that we know we're supposed to do, you know, be compassionate, understanding, you know, don't get your ego involved, all these things that we, you know, David's so good at teaching us and Mother's so good at teaching us. And, it's just like these sessions that we have, you know, you put out a problem and I, you know, you raise your hand. Oh, I know the answer. I know the answer. You know, you actually get out there in the world and, oh gosh, you know, I got tripped up, and I really berated myself afterwards. I wasn't so mad at her because she is just what she is. And not only that, but that's her business. Yeah. You know, she can operate the way she wants to. I was really mad at myself, and I, you know, I had a big conversation with God about it, and I said, you know, was your comment really necessary? Why didn't you just let her keep stating your opinion and, you know, that's, and just let it roll right off of you and don't, rise to the bait, so to speak. So, I guess that's an example of how we really for real get tested in the real world. And how are you going to do? And I think, when you're a little disappointed in yourself, I think it's what I've done lately. And I think it's really wise is you just take it to God right away and you just go, look, this was not the plan. This is not what we were supposed to be doing. You know, come on, you know, how we were going so good, you know, right along the tracks. And then all of a sudden, you know, we got derailed, you know, come on, God, you know, you're supposed to kind of stick with me here and, you know, not let these things happen. And so it's kind of the only way where every time, you know, you kind of screw up instead of just ceaselessly beating yourself up, yeah. You know, just go back to God and say, come on, come on, come on. You know, we need to do better. You know, you got to help me. You got to be with me.
And you can imagine had you not taken it to God, you very easily the ego could take it and make it about her. You know, she shouldn't have kept going. And very quickly we build a wall instead of looking at ourselves and saying, how can this make me closer to God? And also recognizing that for 3 days you did very well. So you're capable, which is a huge thing that we have to recognize is when we do it correctly.
I finally cracked you. Like, I couldn't take it anymore. I broke down under the torture. They finally got the truth out of me.
I think especially for Peter, it's hard to do that.
Yeah, no shortage of opinions. So,
well, Peter, I'll be showing my compassion to you. And now I'm not saying this was the case, but you could say it's like mother saying, turn the other cheek 7 times, you know, 70 and then letting it rip. So,
he wasn't being abused though.
If God, in fact, wanted this to happen to her, you could take it as God's will. But the fact that you felt guilty maybe means that, that you should.
I just felt like I didn't, you know, I didn't, I wasn't the highest that's what made me feel bad is
exactly.
That.
Exactly. And if you had been meant to do the righteous anger, then you would feel
clean.
Righteous.
Right.
You'd feel clean.
But you know what you were talking about. Thank you, Kate. What you were talking about, Jill. When we have these saints, we get exposed to a saint like Mother or David, and they show this tremendous compassion towards us. You know, that kind of when maybe you didn't think you deserved it, or when any normal human would have had a really different reaction, and they were so kind and so sweet, and it was like completely out of context, and you're. It's so dang humbling. You know, you go, oh my gosh, you were so sweet when I was kind of being a jerk, or I was being, you know, where you could have been very within your bounds to have told me to jump in the lake or whatever. And you're really sweet. That kind of changes you. I mean, when these saints do that and you can feel it, you know, you can really feel that love that they have for you. You just go, this is different. And we can listen to words and listen to words and listen to words. But when you have that experience with a truly compassionate saint, I think this happens to all of us, at one point or another. You just go, this is different than anything I've ever experienced with any other human being, including my parents, my loved ones, my family, or maybe especially my parents, my loved ones, my family. It's overwhelming and you realize there's something different here that I want.
Yeah. It changes us at the molecular level.
Yeah.
The atomic level. Yeah. If we have the eyes to see it. And so it's like think David's writing said that some people just don't see it at all. Even if people are that, you know, they might think, oh, that person's kind, or like Papa talked about, or they may even chastise the saints. I want to read this last part from Papa again. Therefore, let the spiritual aspirant honor saints, serve them selflessly, entitle themselves to their grace, and thus illuminating their lives with divine splendor, rise to the stature of sainthood. It's not lovely that that's how we get to that place. We honor them, we serve them, and we entitle ourselves to their grace. They illuminate our lives with divine splendor. Let's have our closing prayer. I also wanted to thank everybody for their prayers. It was what I like to call a mini miracle, but miraculous. So went from walking around a couple of blocks and feeling okay to spending about 2 hours dragging brush up the hill. So thank you. The prayers were very, very effective. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence. In every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace.
Amen.
Thank you all for coming and sharing your life, God.